Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or DSL Extreme. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is the Tech Guy Podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on July 1st, a Sunday, 2007. This is show 366. Enjoy. Well, a very good day to you. I am Leo Laporte, and it's time to talk high tech. Yes, it's iPhone Day 2, America held hostage. And I promise, not an entire show devoted to the iPhone, but we will be talking iPhone, of course, because this was the weekend that iPhone went on sale, Apple's new, and I might say, to make it more interesting to some of you, Apple's new iPod, as well as new phone, and Apple's calling it an Internet Navigator. That means it's got a web browser and email. And it's a pretty cool device, but we'll talk about it. We'll get some reviews from wirelessinfo.com, which is a very good, highly respected wireless review site. These guys have all the equipment to test its signal strength and its sound quality, everything you need to know spec-wise about the iPhone. We'll also have some subjective reviews about the iPhone's usability, its fit and finish, how it feels in your hand. Callie Lewis of GeekBrief.tv will be joining us. And I'll talk about my experience because I also joined the hordes and waited in line at my little local AT&T store. You know, you didn't have to wait in line, it turns out. So those hundred or thousand or so of us who waited in line at Apple stores and AT&T stores across the country really kind of in some ways wasted our time, because the next day you could wander into an Apple store. Even that evening after the line was cleared, you could walk into an Apple store and pick one up at your leisure. Not necessarily so true of the AT&T stores. It looks like that most of the stores had no more than 60 phones. The store I was at, I was lucky 13 in line, so I knew I was going to get a phone. I asked the manager. He said, yeah, don't worry, you'll get a phone. And there were about 60 people, 67, I think, at last count, trying to get into the store. So they were probably sold out that night. I didn't stick around to find out. Once I got that iPhone in my hands after about half an hour of negotiating with the computers, the AT&T computers kind of slowed down, bogged down, I rushed home and activated it. Had no trouble. So I'll give you my impressions as well. I talked a little bit about it on the last show. So for those of you who are hearing this again, I apologize. I'll try to make it sound a little bit different. And of course, I have a little bit more experience with the phone than I did before. But what I said yesterday still holds. This phone represents everything both good and bad about Apple. Beautiful design, an elegant phone, a user interface that's unique and works. Works so well, it makes you want to play with it. Makes you feel like, oh, this is cool. And I have to say, after 2 days, I have still not gotten over that cool factor, but very usable. But also, as with almost all Apple products, there's a certain arrogance. Apple, and mostly Steve Jobs, are convinced they know how to make a product. And, you know, the one-button mouse is a good example of this. Doesn't matter what the consumer wants, Apple knows what's good for us. So there's some things that are just oddly missing from this phone. Most of them can be fixed. In fact, probably will be fixed with a software update. I mean, there's no cut and paste. The notes don't sync. There's no MMS. Some can be fixed in hardware, which means we'll have to wait to revision 2. GPS is missing. It has a mapping application, but don't get confused. The phone doesn't know where you are. You have to tell it, and it won't speak to you. You have to press a button. But in other respects, it's a beautiful phone. And I think that people will be pretty happy with it. But there are some negatives. We'll talk about those. 8888-ASK-LEO. 8888-ASK-LEO is my number if you want to find out more about the phone or ask a question about technology of any kind, whether that's computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater. We talk about it. If it's got a chip in it, we'll talk about it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. We got also coming up Steve Gibson, our security guru, to give us some security tips. The gadget guru, Ron Rosberg, he will not be talking about iPhone because I don't think he has one. He like the rest of the press, is waiting. You know, only four privileged golden members of the press. It's kind of like Willy Wonka, isn't it? There, only four got those golden tickets that let them into the Apple candy factory before Friday. That was USA Today, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and Newsweek. They got phones on the 12th, 11th or 12th, about 2 weeks ago. Their reviews, I have to say, were pretty balanced. They complained about the slow edge network, but they also seemed a little bit more favorable than subsequent reviews from reviewers who were less honored by Apple. And I think that's not too surprising, is it? I think if you think about it, it makes sense that the guys who get the special treatment from Apple are going to be a little more likely to treat Apple specially. I think in balance, this is a very important product. I think there are things Apple could have done and should have done differently. To lock into AT&T seems a huge mistake. If USA Today is correct, they've locked into AT&T for 5 years. I think a lot of you are going to say, I'm not getting that phone. I'm not going to AT&T. If you're in many cities in this country, AT&T doesn't do very well, doesn't have very good signal. That eliminates you completely. It also means that if you've got an existing contract with another carrier and you don't want to change, or you can't because it's cost so much, you're left out of the cold. So I think that in balance, there's some things Apple might have done differently, but it's a very important product. We'll talk more about it in just a bit. We'll also talk about some of the experiences in the line. Did you see that the mayor, this was, I think, more an attempt to get attention than anything else. The mayor of Philadelphia. Excuse me, there seems to be a...
Come here.
There's a puppy in here. The mayor of Philadelphia decided that he would wait in line, I think more to get attention than anything else, and stayed there for a while until a guy in a mohawk walked up to him and asked, Mr. Mayor, what are you doing here sitting in line when there have been 200 murders already in Philadelphia? Kind of a confrontational question. The mayor didn't want to answer it. He kind of ran off and put an aide in his place. No word whether the mayor got his cell phone or not. A lot of Apple people in line, surprisingly. Steve Wozniak, the guy who invented the Apple computer, waited in line at the Valley Fair Mall in San Jose. He didn't have to. Apple sent me a phone on Saturday, but I want to be part of this event. And it was an event. If you waited in line anywhere, you realize it was almost a party. Unlike the PlayStation 3, no violence. Speculators got theirs. A couple of stories of people. There's a story of one woman who paid $800 to jump the line to get up in front. $800. She thought she'd be able to buy a bunch of iPhones to sell on eBay and make a killing. She found out she could only buy what was one at the AT&T store. Apple store sold you two, but she was only able to get one phone. And then if she rushed home and put it on eBay, I hope she sold it quickly, because it became apparent very quickly that you didn't have to buy an iPhone on eBay for, I think the top price I saw was $1,500, because you could just walk into an Apple store and get one for the list price. List price is very high. $500 for a 4-gigabyte phone, $600 for an 8-gigabyte phone. You have to buy, of course, AT&T phone service for 2 years. You're committed. And that service isn't cheap. The if you're starting from scratch, the least expensive service is $60 a month. The iPhone data plan itself is not that expensive. In fact, it's surprisingly reasonable. If you're already an AT&T customer, you add the iPhone unlimited data plan for $20 a month. Something you should pay attention to, though, the iPhone, another lack, doesn't have a chat client. A lot of smartphones are able to do this chatting, and if they're not, you can always download a third-party program to do it. The iPhone doesn't do it. It treats text messaging as chat. So you may be tempted, in fact, I think many will, to be sending messages back and forth from the iPhone. And that's going to cost you, because with that data plan, you only get 200 messages a month, which if you're treating it like chat, it's going to take you about 2 days to go through. I would suggest, if you're thinking about it anyway, getting a bigger data plan, because it's that could add up for you. I think it's 15, what is it, 10 bucks a month for another 1,500 messages and for 20 bucks a month, unlimited SMS. That is, I think, probably the biggest. There's two flaws in the iPhone, and really it has to do with openness. And I think you know that I'm a big fan of open software, non-proprietary stuff. And I think by going with AT&T, Apple kind of kowtowed to the most old-fashioned of cell phone companies. I'm sure some of the decisions that Apple made in the phone have to do more with AT&T's desires than their own desires. And I would have liked to have seen an unlocked device that you could put on any GSM service, giving you at least a little more choice. They get some benefit by going with AT&T. They have that visual voicemail and some features that are AT&T specific, but not enough, I think, to justify it. And the second big mistake is they didn't open it to developers. Now, this may change. In fact, I think this will change. But right now, any limitations of the iPhone, you're stuck with. Apple's way or the highway. Nobody can put additional applications on there. They can design them for the web browser, but they can't put their own applications on there. I suspect within a month or two, you'll see a change there. Apple probably, I'm guessing, wanted everybody to have the best possible experience. The problem with third-party applications, as Steve Jobs has said, is they can impact reliability and performance. So let's let this phone shine for a couple of months. Then we'll let people put third-party apps on it that is absent design by anybody but Apple. I also heard a rumor that the third-party application development kit, the SDK, they call it, Software Developers Kit, is not ready yet for Windows particularly. So maybe that has something to do with it. But I promise, not all iPhones all the time. No. Anything you want to talk about, we'll do it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. You also can go to the website, techguylabs.com. You'll find a really fun, a great little chat there, irc.dslextreme.com, if you want to go directly. And, of course, notes from Shuby about what we talk about. It's techguylabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. You can also watch the show. I don't know why you'd want to, but you can. On video, live, via the streaming cameras, on Stick'em and Ustream.tv. Visit the website, techguylabs.com, or that'll be the Stick'em cam. Or you can go to twit.tv/live to see both together. Mainly call me, 8888-ASK-LEO. They're asking on the in the chat room, they want me to hold up the iPhone to the Stick'em cam. You know, it's funny, we've been looking at pictures of the iPhone for 6 months, and it's kind of hard to adjust to the fact that it's actually a real phone. Feels, you know, it's I have been very happy with my Nokia N95, also a very expensive smartphone. It's lighter, it's thicker, but smaller. It does many things better. It's got a 5-megapixel camera with zoom and white balance and flash. The Apple iPhone's 2 megapixels and doesn't have any additional features. You take the picture and that's it. No video either. But the Apple iPhone has a touchscreen full keyboard, whereas I have to use the, and for an old guy like me, it's hard, the hunt and peck on the keypad, you know, style on the Nokia N95. One feature that the iPhone has that every phone should have, a few do, I used to have a BlackBerry that did, is a silence switch. So you go into a meeting or you go to do a radio show and you just flip the switch. Wish my dog had that. You just flip the switch and no more rings, no more tones, nothing. It's silent. Of course, you got to remember to flip it back again before you leave the meeting. That's my wife always says, I can never reach you. And I said, well, dear, it's because I unfortunately turned my phone off, turned the ringer off, and now I forgot to turn it back on. So remember to turn it back on. Very important. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's get to the phones. Line 2, Michael in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
You are in, I am told, the most wired city in America. At least that's what the mayor told me.
That's what I've heard.
I don't know if it's true, but Tacoma's really turned itself around. It was going downhill for a while, and now because of their initiatives to get tech industries in there and to really modernize the place, it's a beautiful city.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Have you lived there a long time?
Lived in the area most.
Yeah, yeah. What can I do for you?
Hey, I've been thinking about switching. I run PCs right now. Been thinking about switching over to Apple, but I don't have the money to go out and buy a brand new.
Right.
And I was just curious, how old can you go and still be useful on used computers?
On used computers, the answer varies, but I got to tell you, with Apple, there's a significant line in the sand, and that's when it went from PowerPC, the Motorola chips, the IBM chips, to the Intel chips, and that happened about a year ago. You really don't want to get anything without an Intel chip in it. And that's because all the new software is Intel-specific. Apple's new operating system is Intel-specific. You could still run it on the old machines, but who knows how much longer that'll last.
Right.
So and it's a significant jump in performance, I'll say. I would say any Intel Mac would be fine to buy if it was well taken care of. It's less than a 2 years old, and it's fairly modern. Now, you can get a Mac Mini for about $600.
Okay.
And that, if you wanted to buy a new one, that would be a good choice. You can use your existing keyboard, mouse, and monitor from your PC, so you don't have to go out and buy any additional stuff, just that little box. You can even use it with your PC. If you get a Switch, you could just have both of them. And and that's kind of a nice transition for people who are PC users. Yeah, but I think the other thing to look at is refurbished Macs. Apple sells them. And in general, refurbished computers, if you purchase them from the manufacturer, they're still current. And they're still under warranty. You know, they give you the full warranty. Are a very good deal. Usually what they are computers that were sold, the box was opened, and then the guy who bought it had buyer's remorse or for whatever reason decided to return it. They can't sell them as new, but really it's not used. It's just the box was opened. So if Apple has refurbished Macs as well, and I believe you can go to most Apple dealers and ask about refurbished Macs, that's a very good way. You won't get a huge price cut because Apple knows how valuable their computers are. They sell them at a premium because they can. But is $600 out of your price range?
That's about the highest.
The highest, right. Another thing to keep in mind, while Apple's do hardware seems to be more expensive, although if you compare apples to apples, so to speak, if you compare hardware to hardware, they're usually very close. In fact, for a while, the Mac Pro was cheaper than a comparable Dell. With the dual Xeons, the thing to keep in mind also is that the software situation is a little different with the Mac. You don't get Office, and if Office is important, you're going to have to add that cost in. But you do get iMovie, iDVD, GarageBand, iTunes. We can get that for free anyway. You get a pretty good suite of kind of content creating software. So depending on what you're going to do with it, it could be less expensive or it could be more expensive. If you need Office. Or let's say you want to run Windows and you need Parallels in Windows, it could end up being quite a bit more expensive. It doesn't come with Windows, and if that's important to you, and you can run Windows on these, it's another reason to get an Intel Mac. But if that's important to you, that adds significantly to the cost. It's $80 for Parallels, but you have to have a copy of Windows, too.
Well, I have more than one copy.
Yes. So. If you're a former Windows user, you may have a few to spare.
I have a version from 95 on up.
Why? Just out of curiosity, why are you thinking about making the switch?
I'm tired of PCs. Vista was the final straw.
Yeah. I'll tell you, PCs work. They're functional, but there's nothing quite so elegant as what Apple's doing. And right now, I think thanks to the iPhone, they've got a lot of attention on them.
The Tech Guy is brought to you by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or visit them online at dslextreme.com.
Tech Guy from the Tech Guy Labs, where the sun is beating down and I'm beating up. But I'll tell you, we're still talking tech. We're having a great time doing it. And, you know, here we are in midsummer. There's no better time to talk about security. Well, there's no time. It's always talk about security with Steve Gibson from GRC.com. We like to talk to him every week on the show. Hi, Steve.
It's always a pleasure, Leo. And, you know, you are the tech guy. I listen to the show, and it's just amazing how much info you have gathered over the years.
You're making me blush. Well, that's part of the fun of it, is that, you know, and there's plenty of questions that come up that I don't know the answer to. But by the time we get to the end of the show, I usually find the answers to everything, or the audience will give us the answer. And it's nice. I'm learning as much as everybody is every day. So I really love, I will never stop doing this show. All the other things I'm doing, Steve and I, for instance, do an hour-long podcast every Thursday in which we really dig deep into the details of security. Well, Steve does. I sit there and learn. And, you know, I do a lot of things like that. But this show is really kind of the engine for everything else. So, Steve, we're going to talk about security this week. We're going to talk about, in fact, something that's new in Vista and supposed to protect you in Vista.
Yeah, it's something called UAC, User Account Control. Microsoft did in order to solve a problem that Windows has always had, and you could argue that operating systems which are lagging behind, for example, Unix operating systems and Linux, I think, don't have quite this level of elegance in managing security. We've spoken before about the difference when you log on as a limited user or as an administrator, and how essentially any software you run runs with the privileges of the account you're logged on to. The problem is that malicious software that you don't intend to run, but which somehow gets in your machine, you click on a link on a bad website, you open a piece of specially crafted malicious email, whatever, something gets loose in your system. Well, if you happen to be logged on at the time as an administrator, it's loose and it's an administrator. I mean, it can do anything you can do. So the real advantage of logging in with limited rights is that anything you are doing, any software you run, is constrained by the same rights. The problem was that this was always a pain for Windows users, because if they were security conscious, if they were trying to do the best job for security, they would conscientiously log in as a regular user, that is not an administrative user, which reduced their rights and made the system more secure against things they might do inadvertently. So what Microsoft did, I mean, it's one of the major changes in Vista, and in fact, it annoys a lot of people because they don't understand the benefit they're getting from it. What Microsoft does is, by default, even when you log in as an administrator, which is actually still the default case for Microsoft, even when you log in, Microsoft actually logs in two people or two accounts. It logs in an administrative version and a limited rights version at the same time. And unless you actually need to be an administrator, you're not. So you're being protected by Vista all the time. And what happens is, when software needs to do something risky, it needs to, for example, alter the so-called registry because it wants to set itself up to run automatically whenever you turn on your computer. Well, that's risky because, for example, Trojans and malware and spyware and viruses, they all want to do that too so they can hold on to your computer. So when you're installing software, for example, and the software you're installing attempts to make a modification which is risky, Vista pops up a dialogue to say, hey, wait a sec, this software is trying to make a security-related or risky modification to your operating system. Do you want to proceed? Well, if you're installing something that you know that you're installing, you'd say, yes, and you just click yes and proceed. Where this becomes really valuable is if this is not what you intend. you clicked on a piece of email and this thing pops up and saying, hey, something's installing itself. It's like, whoa, hold on now. Well, in the old days, logged in on as an administrator, there was no such notification. And this bad piece of email would have slipped right into your computer. And a couple of days from now, you'd be scratching your head wondering, you know, why things seem slow and what's gone wrong. Now under Vista, you get this notification, which annoys people because it's new. And I'm, you know, the message here is don't be annoyed by this. Put up with it, because when it pops up and you're not expecting it, you've just been saved.
Yeah, and that's the problem, of course, with all of these systems, as you mentioned, is that people eventually give up. There's this fatigue factor, or worse, they ignore it. They just say, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's what happened with Windows XP, with the certificate solution, which was admittedly less obvious. People just click, okay.
Right. Over time, you end up just sort of getting inured to this, and it's like, oh, here we are again.
But don't.
And you dismiss it when in fact you should not.
And if you did, as we recommended last week, as Steve recommended last week, if you did if stop operating as administrator and start operating as a limited user, it will be even more annoying but more secure, because it'll ask you for the password.
Right. Because if you log in as an administrator, it knows you have the administrative credentials. Even though it normally runs you without them, it promotes you with a single click. But exactly as you said, Leo, if you log in as a limited user, it'll prompt you for the administrative credentials every time. And I have to agree with you that really can get a little bit annoying.
I'm used to it because I use a Mac, and it's done that always. On the Mac, there's no way to turn it off, as there is on Windows. But you can just kind of get inured to it and start saying, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, the core problem is our systems are vulnerable. If our systems were not vulnerable, it wouldn't matter what we ran as whom, because they wouldn't be vulnerable.
Right.
But although Microsoft is arguably moving towards less vulnerable systems, they can't make them invulnerable today, because it would break compatibility with so much of the software that was developed, and in fact, even non-malicious software. We don't care if Vista breaks malicious software, but it would break good software that didn't intend to be doing things that malicious software also does. But, you know, Microsoft is only able to change things at a certain rate in order to keep them compatible with the past. So
it's
moving in the right direction, but they're not there yet.
Steve Gibson, as always, I'm so glad you join us on this show, because you really, I think, and I hope everybody's listening and paying attention, you really give us such useful information. As I mentioned, to hear more of Steve, listen to our security podcast, Security Now, every Thursday. It's on Twit, my podcast network. Twit.tv is the website. Steve's site is grc.com. That's where you'll find all sorts of great stuff, including Wizmo, and the free security software he writes, and his program SpinRite, the world's finest, the best, the one and only hard drive recovery and maintenance utility, grc.com. Thanks, Steve. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Leo.
So let's move on to the phone calls, and we will continue to talk about the iPhone, but anything else you want to talk about as well, including Vista Security. 8888 Ask Leo. Lauren's on the line from Johnson City, Tennessee. Hello, Lauren.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
What can I do for you today?
Well, I wanted to mention a few things about the iPhone that maybe not everybody knows.
They may be showstoppers for you, huh? Have you bought one?
I have not, and these are reasons why I have not.
Yep. Good, I'd like to hear it.
It is not G3 compatible.
3G, yeah, that's not, it doesn't
3G,
work.
Yeah.
There are higher speed data networks. Verizon and Sprint have higher speed data networks. Actually, AT&T does too, but not in every market. Mm-hmm. Probably not in Johnson City. It has HSDPA, but it is in many major markets and will eventually be rolled out. I agree with you, and that's what all four of the big four reviewers said, is that the edge network, the data network that's offered, is not fast enough. Now, remember, if you've got Wi-Fi, the phone screams, and it works very
well on Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it works very well on Wi-Fi. But I agree with you. Edge is slow. But, of course, if you're an AT&T customer in Johnson City, you're stuck with Edge no matter what phone you use.
That's correct. I mean, the only major cities in the area that have it are about 2 hours away.
Right. So that's not, but I think that Apple will almost undoubtedly do that. Just not right. That'll be a second generation. Now, what the reason they say is battery life.
Right.
And I have to say, this does have much better battery life than many phones that I've used. Not perfect. You have to charge it every night, as you do most smartphones. But it's surprisingly, you can keep the Wi-Fi on and you can keep the Bluetooth on without draining the battery, which is pretty good. Okay, right. That's one. I agree with you. What else?
The warranty on it.
Now, I don't know about that. What's the warranty?
See, on your normal singular AT&T phones, you have a one-year warranty on the phone.
Right.
That's if it's, you know, damaged, you know, it's manufactured damage or
right.
anything like
defective,
that.
Not if you drop it.
Right, if you drop it, that's
your fault. Well, what is the warranty on this phone?
It is through Apple. You cannot get it through AT&T.
Interesting. Yeah, Apple does not
yet. It's a 90-day warranty.
Yeah, Apple does not yet offer AppleCare, although I'm told they plan to offer AppleCare.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be then, in effect, you know, one of those extended warranty plans. I don't usually recommend those, although on a cell phone, it's not necessarily a bad idea, particularly if you're rough on them. And I'll tell you, this thing, I could see just, it's easy to drop. I could just see that glass screen shattering.
Yes, it is. That's the other thing. AT&T also does not offer insurance on the phone.
Right.
So if you drop it,
what the AT&T guy said to me is just take care of it for 3 weeks until Apple comes out with the AppleCare.
Yeah, that's the only thing. Just be really careful with it if
you've got a few seconds left.
I'm waiting for the third generation most likely to come out of this phone.
I even think
about it.
That's my advice to most people, unless you're an early adopter, one of those people that has to have the latest, greatest. You're absolutely right, Lauren. You should wait. This phone will get cheaper and better, just like the iPods. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Opening me up.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. 8888 Ask Leo if you want to talk about tech. Anything. Computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, iPods or iPhones. Can't help but talk about the iPhone. Came out on Friday at 6 p.m. I would guess about 100,000 people waited in line. It's hard to say how many they sold. Estimates are around 200,000. It'll probably outsell the Zune by the end of the week. Although you can still find stores, pockets of Apple stores that still have them. But more and more of their Apple stores are selling out, too. And I'm guessing they had a million in the pipeline. Apparently, they are resupplying, though, by FedEx overnight. Apple has a finder, apple.com/retail/iPhone, that'll tell you, but it won't tell you till the store's closed tonight because they don't know. They're not updating it in real time. They update it at the end. I think they call the stores one by one. Callie Lewis is the host of GeekBrief.tv, a fantastic video podcast about gadgets. She's a gadgeteer from Dallas. And a good friend. She's co-hosted with me on Call for Help, my TV show, and she's on the line right now via Skype from her studios, her brand new studios in Dallas. You moved to some new studios.
Yeah. Moved and got better lighting, and I like the setup much better here.
That's cool. So you're no longer doing it in the apartment. You're doing it in...
No. We moved both.
Oh, you moved your apartment is what you did.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much.
Most podcasters do it from their own homes because why not, right?
Yeah, exactly. I like being able to work in my pajamas.
Well, she doesn't do the TV. Actually, she does do the TV show in her jammies sometimes.
I do. bottom half, at least.
I understand you haven't actually been to bed since you got the iPhone activated.
I got a little bit of sleep, but yeah, I stayed up last night and just played and, you know, looked at every nook and cranny and just, I couldn't put it down. I had the TV on, but I didn't pay attention to what it was, you know.
It's one of those devices that, now did you get two? Did Neil get one too, or just you?
Yes. Yeah, both of us got one.
Okay, so there's no fighting over the iPhone then.
There's no fighting. And we called a few people and, you know, had the merge call thing going on.
That works pretty well, doesn't it?
It works great, yeah.
So they've demonstrated this, of course, many, many times. I think Steve even demonstrated it when he announced the iPhone. You're talking on the phone. Somebody else calls. You put the first call on hold. You say hi. And then you say, let me merge the two and the two calls. Of course, AT&T likes it because you're paying twice as much.
Right.
But
it's so simple.
Yeah, it's very convenient. All right. Well, tell me first what you don't like about the phone. Is there anything you don't like about it?
Well, they're the obvious things that everybody talks about, you know, Edge and all that. But, well, speaking of that real quick, AT&T did mention to me on the phone that you can just drop the data plan once it's all set up. So if you do have access, good access to Wi-Fi, just drop the data plan if you know, if that's not, if that's an issue for you.
And that's what you're going to do because you have Wi-Fi everywhere you go.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no reason for you to keep the edge.
Right. I'm a frugal girl. I don't want to pay $30 for something I'm not going to use.
Do you still get SMS though? Is that separate from the edge? The text messaging? I bet it is.
I bet it is.
Yeah.
But I'm not a texter.
You're not. Even with this new keyboard and everything.
Yeah. I'll do the email but I'm not a texter. I don't like paying for it.
You're cheap.
I am.
She spends $600 on a phone.
$1,200.
Because she got two of them, but she won't spend an extra $10 a month for SMS.
Okay. Stop talking about what I won't pay for.
Now, what do you like about the phone?
Well, let me go on.
There's more that you don't like? Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Gmail doesn't work in the browser.
No, but it does work in the mail client.
It does work in the mail client, but you can't do landscape mode in the mail client.
Right.
And I don't know if it's something how I set it up, but I don't think so. But all my sent items are coming into my inbox.
Oh.
So I'm not liking the mail application for that reason, for those two reasons. So I went to test it out in the browser. And it does pull up. You can, use and read your email. But when you compose an email, then you can do an address. You can do a subject line. But the compose box itself, it doesn't see it as a text input spot. So you can't actually type anything.
Yeah, this browser is basically Safari, and Gmail's never liked Safari much, and I guess that's a Safari issue.
Right.
I have both in my mail client. I have both Yahoo Mail and Gmail set up. Yahoo Mail is nice because it's push. So when a new message comes to Yahoo, it just comes to my box automatically on the phone, and it notifies me, which is pretty cool.
And you can set up, the Gmail with the pop, and so it notifies you when you've gotten something new. So you're not having an issue with sent mail showing up in your inbox?
Not in my Gmail, no.
Huh.
Sent mail shows up in my sent mail box.
So, I don't have a sent mail box.
But that's probably why you're getting it. You might want to set up a sent mail box. That's probably a Gmail configuration issue of some kind. Because it works fine for me. In fact, I'm looking at the sent box in Gmail, and the two messages I've sent from my phone via Gmail, because the only way to get pictures out of the phone is to email them. And I sent them to Flickr, and they're in my sent mailbox. So that works. What else? Are there any other things you don't like?
That's pretty much it.
You said you didn't like the iPod as much as you thought you would.
Right.
I'm a fan of the iPod functionality. First of all, it's got a speaker built in, which is the first iPod that you can listen to without wearing headphones, and a pretty good one.
Oh, absolutely. I love the iPod function of it, but the only thing about the iPod that I don't like is the scroll bar. I miss the click wheel because usually when I listen to podcasts, if they're audio and they play a lot of music, I want to get on with the
interesting. So you'll use the click wheel. You're right. The click wheel really was a really nice interface feature. So you
it just
miss
jumps
that.
Forward yeah. really fast. Yeah. So I have a hard time with that, but I'll probably get used to it. One good thing, it does Safari. Google Docs doesn't work in Safari on your computer, but it does work on Safari and on the iPhone. Yeah.
Google has worked very hard. I talked to the guy who does Google Reader. He worked very hard to make Google Reader work well on the iPhone. Google's paying close attention to the iPhone. And obviously, it's in their interest. If their docs work, suddenly you have a word processor and a spreadsheet on your phone.
Right.
That's a good way to solve it. Callie Lewis is at geekbrief.tv. It looks great on your iPhone, by the way.
Yeah.
It really looks great. It looks really good. It's a great video podcast four times a week. Yep, you must see it. Geekbrief.tv. And she loves gadgets, as you can tell. So would you buy it again?
Yes.
Thank you, Callie. Great to talk to you. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. 8888. Ask Leo. Thanks, Callie.
Thanks.
That was great. You're so great. I always love talking to you. I miss having you on the show. I can't wait to see you in Vancouver. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 8888 Ask Leo. If you want to talk about tech with me, I'd love to hear from you. Computers, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, gadgets. Yeah, the gadget guru is coming up. Mr. Ron Rosberg. Going to talk about, I don't know, something, but not the iPhone, I don't think. I don't think Ron got one. Maybe he did. He does. This is the man with more cell phones than any other human I know. He carries usually six or seven on his person at all times. He wears a special vest. This sounds like I'm making this up. With special pockets. Each pocket has a different cell phone. If you're of a certain age, you'll remember the banana man on Captain Kangaroo. It's like that. You go, oh, he keeps pulling cell phone. Oh, look. Anyway, Ron joins us in just a little bit. Also coming up, Richard Begulli, he is the editor-in-chief of wirelessinfo.com. He's going to give us a hardcore iPhone roundup review. He's actually tested specs, things like the antenna and the speaker response, that kind of thing. They've got all sorts of sophisticated cell phone test equipment. They've done a really bang-up job of reviewing it. The real reviews are out now, not the marquee glamour reviews that you read in the Times and the Journal and Newsweek and USA Today. Those are softer, fluffier, and frankly, I think a little kinder to the iPhone than it deserves. The reviewers from PC Magazine and CNET and Wireless Info and PC World, those guys are banging on the thing. And I think giving us a more reliable review. So Richard will join us in a bit too. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 8888-ASK-LEO or 888-827-5536. That's 888-827-5536. You don't have to talk about the iPhone. Please. In fact, I'm sure there are quite a few of you who will say, enough. iPhone fatigue has set in. But, you know, the reason I talk about it and the reason it's important is not merely that there's a lot of interest in it, and there is, you can't gainsay that, but more importantly, this is Apple's attempt to reinvent not just the cell phone, but the handheld computer. I think on two out of three counts, they've done what they wanted to do. It certainly has reinvented the cell phone. It is a beautiful, fantastic, workable, usable cell phone. Great in every respect. I think as an iPod, and certainly nobody knows better how to make an iPod better than Apple, as an iPod, it's a huge success. And I don't think that gets much attention paid to it. It is a really good media player. It's the widescreen iPod we've wanted for some time, the widescreen touchscreen iPod. The big middle part, the question mark, is how good a portable computer is it? And that's the hard thing, because you don't have a keyboard. It's tough to make a device this small. It's usable. And I've done some amazing things with the browser, the way it zooms. You can surf to a page. It's a full web browser. You surf to a page. You see a tiny version of the whole page. You double tap the part you want to read. It zooms just to that part. And it knows how wide the text is, how big the picture is. It zooms exactly properly to fill the screen with that image. You can turn it sideways and it'll fill the screen side to side, or turn it straight up and it'll fill it from top to bottom. It's really a nicely done browser. The keyboard, however, the touch keyboard, not great. And while you can learn how to use it better, it is no analog for a real keyboard, I'm afraid. And it does some dumb things which will be fixed, I'm sure. For instance, and I know this is a problem only I have, but I cannot type my name, Laporte. When I go to Notepad and I start typing L-A-P, it won't let me type O. It says, oh, you mean lap, L-A-P-P. I say, no, I don't mean lap. I mean Laporte. I have to start a new word. And then I get to the R and the same thing happens. And I've talked to some other people whose names, proper names, are also a little trickier because the keyboard is too smart. Or trying to be. It's too dumb, really, but it's trying to be too smart. That predictive text, though, is a good idea, and it does help in a lot of ways. In fact, one of the things that happens as you use it is you realize you should trust it. This is what Jobs said, and he's been mocked quite a bit because, I shouldn't have to trust the technology. But it's true that even if you type a very poor approximation of what you're going for, if it's not a proper word, if it's in its dictionary, it'll recognize it, and you just press space bar, it'll fix the typos. And so for typing plain text, it's very good. The problem is where the word isn't in its dictionary. Then it just has no idea. And unfortunately, there are a lot of words not in the dictionary. Now, that's all fixable. They just push an update. There will be an update this week, I hear. So that should be fixed. There I am doing it again, talking about the iPhone. Again, just in case you didn't hear, my bottom line, unless you have to have the latest, greatest, unless you've got $600 burning a hole in your pocket and you just can't wait to have the newest iPod, the hottest new cell phone on the market, if you're the kind of person who bought the Razr when it came out at $500, unless you're that person, I would wait to the second generation. On the other hand, if you like the attention, for the next couple of weeks, anybody who has an iPhone is going to have a lot of friends. Everywhere I go, people say, oh, is that the iPhone? Ooh, can I see that? Demos really well. The photo album. I mean, it's really a great iPod. It's a great media player. Bob Middleton, Ohio. Hello, Bob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. One is, I was at the Apple store, and I was trying to get some information on Final Cut yesterday, but big problem was the attendants didn't really seem too interested in talking to me.
They were a little
really
busy.
Talk about the iPhone.
Yeah, they were a little busy with something else, I think.
Yeah, well, I wanted to get the upgrade of Final Cut.
Yes.
And one of my questions is, I have two Macs. I've got a G4 and I've got a Mac Pro.
Yes.
And what I want to do is I want to know, first of all, since this is an upgrade, I've already got the older version of Final Cut on the G4. And if I get the upgrade, would I be able to legally use the older version of the software and the upgraded version of the software on my Mac Pro side by side? Or is this a licensing conflict since it's a binary deal, you know?
Yeah, I don't think that the licensing would be a problem. I think that the install would be a problem, though. Not the applications themselves. You'd be able to have separate versions of the applications, but it installs a lot of low-level stuff, a new compressor and new codecs and so forth. You'd be kind of, I think you'd have to use those, but
okay.
You want to keep the old Final Cut lying around. You could do that.
Okay. What if I were to just use the new disk is it legal to use
yes.
the new binary on both machines?
Oh, I see what you're saying. You know, license agreement-wise, I'm not sure. If you buy an upgrade version, if you can keep the old one around, I think technically you can. I don't know license-wise. Can you run it on two machines? Usually Apple's pretty lenient about that. They may... That's a good question. You know, I haven't got the new Final Cut yet. They're sending it to me, and it's supposed to arrive this week. And I can tell you, they in the past, they've had an activation scheme, and it may be that activation scheme prevents doing what you want to do.
Okay.
Running it on two machines. But I be honest with you, I don't know. Somebody will tell me.
Okay. Also, I wanted to say about the iPhone. Sorry to bring that subject up.
I don't mind. I'm just trying to be sensitive to people who are sick to death of it, but I guess they don't have to listen. They can come back next week.
Well, from a social perspective, I mean, I was observing the people, and I actually got my hands on this thing. And first of all, I hate telephones. I hate cell phones, but this thing is beautiful.
Yeah.
And it really made me want it, but I don't have the money for it, so I didn't get it. But I did notice one thing. It had the effect on people that I would say the One Ring had on Frodo. It was, you know, that just the look in people's eyes. There was one gentleman that was looking at me.
precious, my precious.
Exactly. It was, you know, it was that thing where, and it just came to me. I mean, the whole idea came to me. Watching this guy, it one ring to rule them all, one
yeah.
ring to find them.
Yeah.
You know, and what's that one ring? It's that little ringtone.
One ringtone. And you
yeah.
Don't you love that ringtone? I have to say, they don't give you, by the way, the ability, and this is another feature that seems to be missing, the ability to put your own ringtones in. But I have to say, the default ringtone is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's true. And the thing of it is that, you know, everybody bashes Apple. I didn't always used to be an Apple fan. I worked with Windows for about 11 years until I finally gave in, being a graphic designer and video producer.
Yeah, you kind of have to use it. If you want to edit video, you got to go Final Cut.
But the thing I've discovered about Apple, the thing that people really love about this, the cult behind it is that all of their stuff is as beautiful as Tiffany.
Yes. Yes.
And as accessible as Coca-Cola.
Yep.
That is what I love about it.
But and that's aside, a beautiful way to put it. I think it's remarkable. There are very few things that are like that.
And, but
it's elegant. You know, in one word, that's elegance.
Oh, and it looks so much, I was thinking it looks so much like a Star Trek tricorder. But better.
And probably on purpose. Hey, yeah, Bob, it's great to talk to you. I'll find out about the Final Cut thing for you, okay?
Oh, I would really greatly appreciate it.
Keep listening. Somebody will let me know either in the chat room or they'll call and they'll let us know. And I'll know by next week if I don't know. Now, let me play the marimba sound for you. This is the default ringtone on the iPhone. Isn't that neat? No, you don't want to change that because that's the signature. You've got one in your pocket. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Coming up, gadget guru Ron Rosberg. Talk about some fantastic new gadget, I'm sure. Let's get back to the phones. Vern's on the line from San Pedro, California. Hello, Vern. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hey, listen, here's what's going on. I've got an Apple iMac that I bought a couple months ago, and I bought it specifically for editing with Final Cut Pro.
Okay.
And it is all completely new to me. I'm I was a dyed-in-the-wool Windows fan.
That's okay. I'm not gonna yell at you. Are you waiting for me to yell at you? I'm not gonna yell at you. I think that's fine.
And so there's lots. I love the iMac. It's so good. It runs well. It runs Vista pretty well. You know, I did get the 2 gigabytes of RAM. I love how Photoshop works in Vista on the iMac.
Yes.
It works super well.
So you're running, that's interesting. So you've got an iMac, an Intel iMac. You're running, is it Parallels you're running or are you running Boot Camp?
I was running Boot Camp, and what happened was, you know, being a noob and a novice to the iMac world, I downloaded the beta version, and a couple weeks ago, you know, I was trying to edit this one piece of video to put on YouTube, and I just couldn't get it right in Final Cut, so I thought, okay, I'll go ahead and I'll edit it in Vegas, because I have Vegas on the Vista.
Which is an excellent program, by the way. I love Vegas.
Oh, they're both excellent.
Yeah.
You know, so going from Vegas to Final Cut was an adjustment, but, you know, I chose a great video on purpose to learn how to use it. So to my chagrin, I go to open up Vista, and I'm looking for Boot Camp, and it was nowhere.
Oh, no.
It was completely gone.
The partition got erased somehow.
No, the partition is there, but Boot Camp is gone. And I don't understand, you know, how that happened.
You mean there's nothing on the partition? There's no, you can't boot into Windows.
Well, I tried downloading Boot Camp again.
Here's what Boot Camp doesn't actually do anything. All Boot Camp does is partition the drive and make a CD.
Oh, okay.
You don't need Boot Camp. It partitions the drive and makes a CD with drivers on it. Then you reboot and install Windows onto that second partition. And then,
right.
Now the one thing you do need is when you first start up the computer, you need a bootloader. So when you start up the computer, you're not seeing the option to choose Windows or Mac? Is that what's going on?
No, I'm not seeing the option to choose.
Ah, okay. That's yeah, Boot Camp itself is something different. It sounds like your bootloader got messed up.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sure there's a way to fix that. Let me see if... I don't know off the top of my head. I'm going to see if I can find that out for you. It's a missing, small missing file. One thing you could try, and I think this will work, is hold down the Option key when you boot.
Okay.
And what that does normally on a Mac is looks and sees which partitions are bootable and gives you the option to choose one or the other. That should give you the option to choose the Windows partition. If it doesn't, then we do need the bootloader. And I'll be honest with you, I never had that problem. So I'm not sure exactly how to fix it, but I'm sure you can fix that. So your bootloader is gone is what's going on. That's all it is. It's the thing that says you need to choose which operating system.
So it would be like Lilo.
It's Lilo. It's exactly what it is.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, it's Lilo. It isn't Lilo, but it's Lilo-like. It could be Grub. Right. For all I know, it could be Lilo. I don't know. It's something that says when you first boot up, oh, okay, now choose an operating system. And I'm sure that can be fixed. Try rebooting with the option key pressed.
I'll give that a shot. You know, what I've been doing is I re-downloaded Bootcamp because I didn't know.
Well, you can't really reinstall it at this point. There's nothing.
No, it won't install, but at least it will take me to the point of where I can stick in the Vista disk, and it will boot into Windows from there.
Oh, interesting.
Which is kind of a way around the backyard workaround.
Yeah. You know, I just have to do some research. I never have actually encountered this before, so I'm not sure what the answer is, but I'm sure we'll find out for you. And meanwhile, try that option key and let me know if that works.
I will definitely do that. I wish I was at the computer now to give it a shot. Yeah. But I, you know, when I get home, I will do that.
Yeah, send me an email, leo@techguylabs.com, and let me know. And before the show's over, we'll find something out for you.
Okay, great. Hey, thank you very much,
Thanks
Leo.
For listening, Vern. I appreciate it. Just to mention, by the way, for our Final Cut Pro user, our last call, I've talked to a number of people in the chat room who said, no problem. You can install it on as many machines as you want, which surprised me. When I installed the last version of Final Cut Pro, I got the strong impression it was being activated and it wouldn't run on another machine. But maybe I just assumed that Apple was doing what Windows and everybody else does. And they never have historically. Even Photoshop does that now. So apparently you can. There won't be a problem installing Final Cut Pro, the new one, too, onto multiple machines. I'll tell you what, when I get it, and I'm expecting it to be arrived this week, I will let you know. I'll try it. More of your calls coming up. The Gadget Guru, Ron Rosberg, he's just around the corner. More iPhone conversation, more anything you want to talk about, too. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. And you can also go to our website, techguylabs.com, for show notes, links, more information. We're redesigning it right now. Sasha, one of the guys in our chat room, and I are working on a great new site that's going to have all sorts of interactivity for you. That should be up. Sasha says next week. I don't believe that, but it should be up in the next month or two. Meanwhile, techguylabs.com, the old site, is still there, and lots of information there. Also, a link to our chat room, irc.dslextreme.com. We had 300 people in there yesterday. A mere 278 today. Well, I'll see you in there. I spend some time in there during the show. And also, of course, you can watch the video at twit.tv/live. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I tried to get the PR lady to drive up to Clear Lake and bring one up here, but that didn't entice her enough.
GoToMeeting web conferencing, everyone can see your computer desktop on their computer screen. It's changing the way we do business. Try it free for 30 days. Go to GoToMeeting.com, click the orange Try It Free button, use my name, Leo, as the promo code.
From the Tech Guy Labs in beautiful Northern California, I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, here at the very tippity top of Silicon Valley, looking down the valley at all the crazy little people, little tiny little ants running around with their iPhones. Here's a guy who's not running around with his iPhone, which is odd because he's got every new phone ever invented, Mr. Ron Rosberg, our gadget guru. Hey, Ron.
Yeah, well, I chose to come up to Clear Lake and spend the week up here and on the beautiful shores of Clear Lake and get some R&R, but no, I didn't get an iPhone, and I'm not sure I'll get one. I might not be high enough on the list, but I do
need to get one.
I have some comments. So first of all, hang on a second. Let me just give you my iPhone comments here. Now, and this is not actually playing with it, but first of all, this whole thing, Leo, reminds me of when I got my first Osborne computer.
Oh,
you remember
that? Yeah.
That's exactly the same thing that happened with the Osborne.
People looked at it and go, that's amazing. You could get a computer in a case that only weighs 30 pounds and is as big as a Samsonite. It's incredible.
Exactly. It was a luggable.
My iPhone screen is as big as the Osborne screen and higher resolution and color.
And color, absolutely. So this reminds me, because I was one in Fogg. Remember Fogg?
First Osborne group. Yeah.
Yeah. So that just kind of reminds me.
But
the
and you know, Ron, in many ways, the Osborne did change everything. It was an affordable personal computer that came with WordStar and.
Yep.
It was the first real. I mean, it wasn't the first portable, but it was one of the early portables.
It was, and the same kind of hype and everything else, the same thing happened there.
Yep.
But also, I want to tell you also, because I heard you mention about RIM stock, but actually, on Friday, listen to this, Apple stock went up a dollar or two, RIM stock went up 21% in one day.
Why do you think that is?
165 to 199, Leo, and, you know, well, I think, first of all, this is not going to be a corporate phone. In fact, I was told by someone at AT&T, if you have a corporate account, you really can't get this phone through the corporate account. They're targeting the 20 to 30 year olds, and that's what they want.
I better send mine back then. I'm a little too old.
Yeah, you are. And I am older. So
I'm the equivalent of two 25 year olds. Maybe I should get another phone, and they'll be okay.
But let me tell you this: I spent a lot of time on eBay finding out to see what's going to happen. And by the way, the highest amount for two phones was $10,000 that a guy tried to get. But the price.
And by the way, what an idiot, because you could walk into a store at 9 p.m. on Friday.
Absolutely. Leo, listen to this. So there are thousands of people who went and bought two iPhones, one for themselves and one to sell for $1,000, $1,200. Now, listen to this. I found out what's going to happen with all these phones that come back.
What?
Apple's going to give out 15,000 of them to their employees.
Oh, yeah.
And they're giving them out at the end of July. Does that make sense?
Suddenly, Steve's largesse is not so generous. It makes perfect sense. They're going to get the returns.
That's what I think. Ron Rosberg said it here.
I think you're
right. Anyways, yeah, so that's what's going to happen.
He's giving away something like 12,000? How many Apple employees are there?
I read that there's like 15,000 employees. 15,000. I guess if you've been there part-time, you'll get one if you've been there so long on part-time.
Right.
Anyway, for our listeners today, Leo, those people who are sick and tired of listening about Paris Hilton and the
and iPhone.
And the iPhone, which has been really the only thing dominating the news in the last two or three weeks. I have two products that really totally away from those things. Okay?
Nothing to do with the iPhone.
Absolutely nothing, and nothing to do with phones today. Nothing. I'm staying away from phones today. But the first item I heard about that, I didn't go to CES, but I was, you know, get all the press stuff, and there was a product that was in the CES Innovation Awards. And what was it? It was called the Hydra Brush. This is an electric toothbrush, Leo.
Okay.
And I said if it wasn't a CES item and shown at CES, I probably wouldn't be covering it, but. You know, they kept saying, well, we'd like to send you one. We'd like you to try it out and stuff like that. And Marty Winston, I think you know Marty, he was hyping it. And I said, okay, send me one. And
this isn't the brush that brushes both sides of your teeth at the same time.
Yes, it is, Leo. It is. And let me tell you something. When I got it, took it out of the box, I said, you got to be kidding.
You got to be kidding.
I said, this is the ugliest looking thing I've seen in my life.
It is. It's fat.
And I said, no, there's just no way. I'm not. And then, but they were smart enough to enclose a CD, Leo, that had the Canadian Shopping Channel on it. So they went up about last week, and they did a bunch of stuff, or 2 weeks ago, and they sent me the actual CD. So I happened to stick it in. I didn't have anything to do. I stuck it in, and I started to watch this thing. And I said, wait a second. You know, maybe it does make sense. Then I said, well, all right. Let me see what Amazon says about this, because I really like to read some of the reviews. Leo, either these people are the smartest people in merchandising, because I went through and I read like 20 or 30 reviews, and the reviews are mind-boggling. Every single one of them said, this is unbelievable. Huh. So I started to use it. It has two settings on it, one of 600 per minute strokes and the other one at 800. And they come with four brushes. Two, you have to put two on each one. I mean, you put one on one side, one on the other side. And, Leo, I've got to tell you, instead of 2 minutes in my Sonicare, which 2 minutes of brushing your teeth is like a lifetime, especially if you're tired and you want to go to bed or whatever, this, they claim, 40 seconds. You just turn it on for 40 seconds and turn it off. Doesn't have a timer in it, so you have, you know, just kind of just do it, and it actually brushes all the sides of your teeth. And it comes with one set of brushes to start for 2 weeks, which is a soft set. And then they give you another set that you can use on the 800 setting. And I have to tell you, Leo, I've been using it now for 4 or 5 days, And I'm very impressed with it. And I kind of go along with some of these people. And it sells for $99. Now, the guy who invented this has apparently a lot of other inventions. And he had some gum disease or whatever. And he went and put this thing together because it really is supposed to help your gums. And that's and for kids like this thing. You just put it in your mouth, bite down on it, and it then goes ahead and just you just move it very lightly just on both sides, and that's it. So anyway, take a look at it. It's called the Hydro Brush Express. It's $99, available on Amazon. And check out the reviews. Don't just listen to my review.
40 seconds is a great, because, you know, with the, and I use the Oral-B, and you have to do it 2 minutes.
Yeah, two minutes is just a long time. I you know, it was usually you're tired when you go to bed, and you say, wait a second. And sometimes I'll cheat and just grab my regular toothbrush, and I'm just too tired for the 2 minutes. 40 seconds is a piece of cake. It's really easy.
Yeah.
The other item I'm going to tell you about is the Zircon sonic measure device. Now, I've been trying to measure certain things without having taken a tape out, and this is great for people who, you know, either
I've used Zircon stuff before. They make a lot of really neat little home improvement things.
Yeah, and this thing here, Leo, it looks like it's almost like a PDA, about the size of, let's say, a little bit about the size of a Trio, or maybe your new iPhone's about that size. Has a a funnel there, and all you do is you point like the funnel to the wall you want. And by the way, if you have glass, it won't go through glass. It's going to stop at the glass. But the measurements are unbelievable. They're within probably an inch. You're not going to use this for final measurements. But if you want to get an idea of, let's say, how, and it goes up to 50 feet. Anything over 50 feet, they don't back up. But 50 feet, so if you're doing a measuring for carpet and you want to just get an idea of how much it's going to cost you and stuff like that, or paint surfaces, it's kind of a really a neat item. And it retails, I saw it on Amazon. The one I have is in yellow. They have a black one. And I'm not sure the difference between the black and the yellow. The black one is a little bit less expensive. It's $35 on Amazon. The yellow one, the one I have, is the DMS50L, and it's $45. So if you don't want to carry a tape measure and you want something just really quick, it puts out a pattern, like a star pattern, a round pattern, and then it's like a laser. It's not actually doing laser measurement. It's actually using sonic. But it goes to the wall, and you can see exactly.
Oh, you use the laser so you can see where you're going.
Exactly. Now, if you're going through, you got a bunch of clothes or drapes in front of it, it's not going to do a good job. You have to have kind of an open space to run it. But it's the Zircon sonic measure device and kind of a neat little thing to keep in your toolbox or whatever. So those are my two non-iPhone gadgets for today.
I'm impressed. And not only are they not iPhone, they're really not even digital.
No. Zircon's digital. Absolutely. It's got an LCD display on it.
Oh,
absolutely
right.
Digital.
There you go. Okay.
9-volt battery. And now, I haven't opened up the Hydro Brush to see if it has a chip in it. That's the only thing. We talk about anything that has a chip.
It doesn't have to have a chip. I think that's a good
gadget. But wait a second, Leo. I had a chocolate chip cookie last night, so I know in the brush it has a chip in it.
Go back to the lake. Put your feet in the lake. Stick your head in there while you're at it.
Up in Clear Lake. By the way, I'm wide open. If anyone needs a reservation for Clear Lake, go to clearlake.org. Nobody's calling, but
you invited me and Jennifer to come up and spend the weekend with you, it's because you hadn't been able to rent your cottage.
Absolutely, you know, I figured I'll bring you in.
You never told
me whether you guys are going to come or not.
I haven't talked to Jennifer yet, but we would love to. Clear Lake? Clear Lake what?
Clearlake.org.
I'll give you a plug.
I really appreciate it. We got a great spot right on the water here. You can bring up a boat.
I've never been there. Someday I'm going to come up there.
It's going to be mid-90s starting Wednesday, Thursday, Friday and stuff. So
and all the gadgets you could want. I mean, you know.
Yeah, don't come up here to see an iPhone unless Leo comes up here with it.
I'll bring mine. Hey, it's good to talk to you, Ron. I appreciate it.
Have a great weekend,
enjoy,
everybody.
Yeah, and enjoy your lake experience. I'm jealous. It sounds
okay.
Nice. Take care. Ron Rosberg, he's the gadget guru, joins us every week to talk about gadgets and not the iPhone, which I sincerely appreciate. Let's get back to the phones here. Robert Whittier, California. Hey, Robert, welcome to the show. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, Robert.
I have a question. I have a compact Presario. I believe it's the 2010 NX model.
Okay.
Lately, what's been happening is about the last 3 days when I go to start it, my fan will come on the tower, the computer part.
Okay.
And it may or may not open up.
So what you're saying is you hear noise, you hear things come on, but the screen doesn't come on.
No, because it's dark yet. It hasn't started to open
up.
My XP Home Edition.
What do you see on the screen? Anything?
Well, at one time, it brought up a information screen, all kinds of technical stuff about not starting or if the computer didn't start.
Right.
I don't understand all that stuff.
There's so many different things it could be. It'd be hard for me to pinpoint which one. It could be that the hard drive, it's a fairly old computer, so it could be that the hard drive has some damage on it, not physical damage maybe, but just enough soft damage that it can't boot up the operating system. More likely, and I would look in the text that you saw, more likely what's happened is it is old enough that the battery might have died. There's a battery on the motherboard that backs up information about the hard drive and the time and date and how to start up. And if that battery dies, if it's more than a couple, 3 years old, which it is, that battery could easily have died. I don't remember on that model if the battery was soldered in or if it's just a little lithium coin battery. If it is, just open it up. If it is, you could pop it out, go down to Long's, get another one, replace it. Things should be better. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. We're talking high tech at 8888 Ask Leo. You'll see iPhone reviews everywhere in the next few days. PC World, PC Magazine, CNET, they've all done them. They've all stayed up late, overnight, last couple of days, putting them out. I don't think you'll see a better review, though, than at wirelessinfo.com. That's the website run by my next guest, Richard Bagula. He is the editor-in-chief of wirelessinfo.com. It's a site you've probably heard me recommend, camcorderinfo.com and digitalcamerainfo.com. It's a sister site to those. And one of the reasons I really like these sites is they take the time to actually do measurements, to not merely subjective reviews, but really test these things with equipment. And they're also editorially absolutely, perfect, impeccable integrity. Hey, Richard.
Hey, how you doing?
Good to talk to you again. You didn't get phones from Apple for this. You bought them, right?
No, we went out and we bought them. We camped out at 3 o'clock on Friday morning, and we were there with everybody else, went to buy them.
To me, I think that's important. Consumer Reports does the same thing. They say we don't accept products. We buy them because we want to be just like regular people. We don't want special treatment from these companies because we want to be objective, and I think that's the way to do it. I know you haven't had much sleep. Did you get any sleep last night?
I did. I sort of finally gave up, on a Saturday evening and just basically fell asleep and then woke up this morning feeling much better.
It's been fun because every time I refreshed wirelessinfo.com, there'd be more to the review. You're doing it it's almost a live review as you go.
Yeah, we pretty much decided that we were going to get the review up there as quickly as we had some results and then just update it with the other things. And that's what we've been doing all weekend.
So you compare it on the review to the kind of the phones that are closest in class, the LG Prada, the Trio 750, the BlackBerry 8800, the Curve, in other words, the Nokia N95, which I've been using, and the Helio Ocean, which actually to me sounds like the closest competition and a really nice phone. How does the iPhone stack up?
It stacks up pretty well against most of the phones. I mean, it has some things we like, some things we don't. And to look at a few of the particulars, it has really good audio quality. I mean, I'm actually talking to you right now over an iPhone.
Oh, that's cool. And, doesn't sound like a cell phone at all.
No, it sounds really clear. And we have a very sophisticated analysis system from a company in Boston called Listen Inc. that produces the same equipment that the cell phone manufacturers themselves use. And we have this big head and torso simulator, which simulates the human head and has speakers and microphones built in that sound and talk like people do. Yeah, it's an impressive Peter kit. I'd certainly recommend that people come onto the website wirelessinfo.com and check it out.
Yeah, you see a lot of graphs on frequency response and so forth. Summarize for me. There's two ways to look at it: how it sounds from incoming calls and how you sound to somebody you've called.
We call those send and receive.
Right.
The received sound was really good.
It has good speakers built in.
Yeah, the iPhone seems to have a really good speaker in there, which is great because it's such a thin phone. Sometimes, they don't sound so good, but the iPhone sounded great. There was, nice, clear sound coming through. Everything just sounded good. We measure it against a set of standards defined by international experts in these things.
Right.
And the iPhone was the best one we've tested so far.
Wow.
The send sound was pretty good. there are a couple which were a little better, but the iPhone was certainly a very good sounding phone.
Hey, put it on the speakerphone for a minute, because you're now talking into the phone, but it also has a speakerphone. I thought the speakerphone quality was surprisingly good too. Did you test that as well, or just the...
We haven't tested that yet. That's kind of one of the things that's on our list. If you want to hold on for 1 second, Leo, I'll put you on the speaker.
Okay, it's pretty easy. You just there's this on-screen display. You press speaker and...
Yep. There we go. I'm talking to you on the speakerphone right now.
I think it sounds very good. And it's not right next to your mouth. It's down on the desk? Or
it's just sitting on the desk just in front of me.
I think that's excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, it's a pretty good speakerphone. It's also, a lot of them, you get the cutting in and out. You know, when one person's talking, the other person can't hear you.
Right, and it does that to avoid echo.
Yeah. Yeah, this one doesn't seem to be too bad with that. It certainly seems to have some very good stuff for analyzing the sound going in both directions.
The we played with on Twit on my podcast. You can go back on regular phone, but on my podcast we played not only with this and the speakerphone, but we also played with the earbuds that come with it. They have a built-in microphone. We found that quality excellent as well.
Yeah, that's another thing we're looking to do testing on in the very near future.
I think as a phone, it's a good phone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's it sounds great. It's pretty easy to do the dialing and stuff like that. You get a nice big keypad on the screen when you're looking to dial in a number. So far, we haven't really found a lot of complaints with it as a phone.
One of the things I liked, and we talked a little bit about on Twitter as well, is the speed of the camera. It's very quick to go from off to take a picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very good if you want to take a quick candid shot. We only found it took, that was just like 1.5 seconds, I think it was.
Wow.
So that's pretty good.
And there's very little shutter lag, too. I mean, most phones, my N95, you press the button and you wait a second. This phone, it's almost instantaneous.
Well, pretty much. But of course, with the N95, you're getting 5 megapixel images. You're not getting that with the iPhone.
No, not even close. Yeah. 2 megapixels. I thought they were decent if there's a lot of light. In daylight, they're pretty decent images.
They're not bad. I mean, they certainly are on a par with what we've seen in other cell phone cameras. We test a lot of these things.
It's probably the same hardware, I imagine. Everybody uses the same stuff.
I haven't analyzed the module yet, but I think it probably is exactly the same one that they're using in some of the other cell phones. It's pretty standard components throughout the entire thing, frankly. So.
That's interesting. They didn't do anything magic on the phone.
No, it's the same chips. They use the same Bluetooth modules. They use the same processor. Obviously, they've got a lot more memory than most of the other cell phones, but everything else is pretty standard.
One thing that's not is the touch screen, which is, I think, pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. They've done a nice job with the touch screen. I actually found a little trick this morning, which I'm not sure you guys have come across yet. One thing to bear in mind is that the touch screen actually... It's not when you touch it that it's sensitive. It's when you lift your finger off. So what you can do is, if you're touching and you haven't got the right letter, just move.
Slide
and
it.
Then lift.
Yeah, I do like that a lot. There's a lot of detail, a lot of information on the website, wirelessinfo.com. It's on the front page. They talk about making, receiving calls, multimedia, hardware, software, battery life. They've got some good battery life tests. Real quickly, didn't live up to Apple's specs, but it's still pretty good, yes?
It's still pretty good. We got just over 4 hours on the talk time, and that's not bad at all.
Richard Baguley, thank you so much for joining us. Wirelessinfo.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. A very good day to you. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, and we are talking about technology. It's the toy store, and that's why I love it. Always new toys like the iPhone. Fun stuff to talk about. Yeah, sure, it can be frustrating. Sometimes you want to tear your hair out with this stuff, but it's also cool and neat and interesting. It's like living in the future. I mean, we've got some great stuff we can play with here, whether it's computers or cell phones, or MP3 players. It's home theater. I mean, look at the TV sets we've got. Imagine what somebody traveling in time from 1955 Just imagine, you know, they'd look at the airplanes and they go, well, you know, you have jets now. We had some jets then, but I see you've used jets and they're still pretty much the same. In fact, there's some airlines still flying planes from around that era. You know, and he might look at our cars and say, well, yeah, you know, I mean, some nice designs, but boy, I sure could drive one. I wouldn't have any trouble getting in the car and driving it. Pedals in the same place, brakes in the same place, works pretty much the same. You got airbags? I don't know what those are, but they don't change how I use the thing. But then, say, well, come here, let me show you my TV. And I think he'd feel like he'd entered the future, which he had. I mean, in 50 years, cars haven't changed that much. Airplanes haven't. A lot of our technology is pretty much the same. The incandescent light bulb. And then some of it's changed so much. We've gone from vinyl records to CDs. Our TVs are suddenly vivid and real and amazing. And he might not even be as amazed by the fact that you can get a little camcorder the size of your hand and shoot video that looks that good. You can edit it on this thing called a personal computer. That might amaze him. And do what? Put it on what's the internet? Well, you see, you have this computer. Now, I think a computer you'd kind of get. It's just a shrunk version of, you know, the IBM mainframe somebody from 1955 was used to. He'd kind of get the idea. Oh, I see. You shrunk it down. I get, oh, it's color. That's pretty nice. It's very vivid looking. Yeah. You use this pointer thing, this mouse. I see. It moves the arrow around. That's kind of neat. The keyboard. Oh, I recognize that. Yep. That's the same one Mrs. Marcos taught me to type on in high school. Yeah, it hasn't changed. QWERTY, huh? You'd have think in 50 years that it'd come up with something better than that, huh? You'd recognize that, but boy, you say, well, see this video that I shot? See how vivid that is? I put that on this thing. I edited it down, put some titles on. Oh, that's pretty neat. It's like TV. Yeah, it's like TV, but then watch this. I press this button. It's now available instantly to anyone in the world with a similar computer and internet connection. Oh, wow, that's pretty neat. How many people are there that can do that, he might ask? 1,000? That's pretty cool. We're not sure, but it's well over a billion. A billion? You're telling me you can shoot a video, edit it on this little version of a mainframe, and push a button, and a billion people can see it now? Yeah. Wow, that must change things a lot. Well, we'll see. We'll see. What's that little thing on the desk there that's hooked up to the computer? That little, the glowing thing. What is that? That's a phone. Where's the dial? Oh, we don't have dials. You don't have dials? No, no, no. See, watch. I press this button. It appears on the screen and you just touch it. Wow. Now, see, that iPhone probably looks more like Star Trek than anything else to this visitor, this mythical visitor from 1955. That's pretty amazing. Oh, and did I show you, you know, that video that we edited? Put on the internet a couple of seconds ago. Did I show you that I can play it back now on this phone? Anywhere? Uh-huh. Very interesting. That's what I love this business, and I love this beat. As a journalist, there's no more interesting beat. Nobody dies, nobody gets killed, but it's fun, it's interesting, and it's important. It's not insignificant. Yeah, it's the toy store, but it's also changing things significantly, changing how we work, how we live, how we play. You want to really blow somebody's mind from 1955? Show them World of Warcraft. What's that? Well, it's a 3D world. I'm playing a game. You're in there? Oh yeah, that's me. See the orc with the big axe? That's me. Well, no. What do you mean? That's you. Watch. And you walk around, you interact, you fight in a world that to somebody from 1955 must seem amazingly realistic. Now, by the way, what I didn't mention is that the rate of change from 1955 to now, 50 years ago to now, is double or tripled. So you're going to feel like that guy from 1955 in about 15, 20 years, maybe less, maybe 10. The same kinds of amazing jumps will happen to us. I can imagine going over to visit my grandkids and they're, oh, sorry, little Leo's playing in the holodeck. He'll be out later. Wow. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number if you want to talk about tech. We've been talking a lot about the iPhone, but anything having to do with technology we can talk about. Let's go to Deanna in California listening to the great KGO. Hello, Deanna.
Hi. I've been watching you since the days of Call for Help and Screensavers.
Oh, I'm so glad. It's nice to meet you finally.
My question is this. Can I use a device like a thumb drive to increase the RAM on my computer rather than having to physically install more RAM on my computer?
Unfortunately, well, the answer is yes and no. Unfortunately, not to do what you really want to do. Let's say you're running a program that needs more than you have 512 megabytes and it really slows down and you want to have more RAM. Unfortunately, no. However, there is a little exception. The new Vista, the new version of Windows, does in fact use, if it's the special, you'd have to have a fast USB drive, but it can use that not as RAM, but to cache stuff to speed up the booting process. And some other processes a little bit. It's called a Ready Boost. But it will not take the place of real RAM. And so if you're using Windows XP?
Yes, I'm using Windows XP.
How much memory do you have?
It came with 125. And the reason I'm calling is because there is no more like Screensavers or help.
No, there's this though.
Yeah, but on Screensavers, you've showed us how to do all that stuff.
I can't. You'll have to imagine. I'll describe it, and you'll have to imagine it. But so I can't really show you how. You're right. I wish we were on. You know, the show Call for Help that I did for 6 years on Tech TV, we never stopped doing. I went up to Canada. I do it up there now. It's now called The Lab. And I still do it. You can see it in Canada and Australia. And we're working hard, Deanna, to get it back in the U.S. And I'm sure by the end of the year,
you
will.
Had it on the U.S.
for 3 months.
On Tech TV
from
Canada for a while.
Three months.
Now I can't get it anymore.
No, the stupid station canceled it for the second time. That's why we changed the name. We figured any television station and any network in America is going to say, Call for Help. Oh, yeah, weren't you canceled twice? So we thought, oh, we'll change the name. Maybe that'll fool them. Still got that Leo guy on it, though, does it? Yeah. Anyway,
it's not just you. I miss Patrick.
I know. You know,
and Yoshi and all those guys.
I know. I miss him too. I miss working with him. I miss doing it. Patrick still has a web-based TV show called DLTV. If you go to DL.TV, he talks about a lot of these kinds of things. Yoshi had a baby, and he's a little busy with the baby, so he's not doing any TV right now. But a lot of us are doing video podcasts or regular audio podcasts, and you know, Kevin Rose has a whole network of them at revision3.com. I hear a little birdie tells me Morgan Webb might be doing something soon. So a lot of us have found our way to the internet instead of trying to do this on broadcast, but doing it on the internet. And in a way, that's better. It gives you the chance to watch it when you want to watch it and play it back again and again. But to answer, so it's very kind of you to ask, Deanna. I appreciate it. To answer your question specifically, not really. You really need, unfortunately, you really need to put real RAM in it. And with it, Windows XP, you've really got to have 512 megabytes. If you're going to Vista, a gig is a minimum, and two's better. 2 gigabytes. Tyson's in Vancouver. Hey, Tyson, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Very well. Going to Vancouver next week to do the lab.
Hopefully it stays sunny.
Yes. And usually it starts raining the minute I get there.
Of course.
What can I do for you today?
Well, me and my wife have just recently started a podcast that we've been planning to do for the last year, and we finally
Excellent.
Got together and started doing it.
Tell me about it.
It's called Swimming in the Sandbox.
I like
and
that.
And a lot of it is a lot of parenting stuff.
Excellent.
I'm definitely the geek of the home, so I throw in as much geeky stuff as I can.
I forgot to tell Deanna that Megan Maroney from the Screensavers and I do also do a parenting podcast called Jumping Monkeys.
I've actually just started listening to it.
Twit.tv.
Awesome.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll have Swimming in the Sandbox on because we're talking to a lot of parent podcasters, so that would be great. We'll get you on the show.
That would be awesome.
What's the URL for it?
Swimminginthesandbox.com.
Explains the name.
Yeah.
There wasn't any competition for that URL.
There wasn't. I tried actually doing what you did with Twit. I tried going with Sits, but it was gone.
It's pretty hard these days to find a URL that isn't taken.
Yeah.
So what can I do for you?
We started it because we wanted to keep in touch with friends and family from around the world, but then we're like, well, it's going to be public, so let's
Why
do
not?
Actual stuff too.
I mean, that's something a guy from 55 would really not believe. You mean you can do your own TV and radio shows and potentially have an audience of 1 billion people? Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool. Amazing.
But my problem is with recording it. I'm using Audition, and I've tried Audacity as well. And I'm running Vista. My sound card is built into my motherboard.
Yeah.
And what I want to do is be able to like say do what you do where you have people phone in and you can use Skype.
Short answer is you need a mixer. The problem most of the time is that the computer can't handle multiple channels of sound on that one sound card. You could have multiple sound cards, but really the better way to do it is buy an inexpensive mixer that can take the inputs from the phone, from a microphone, from another computer if you want to play back audio, and then mix it down and send it to your recorder on your PC. You can get a good mixer for a couple of $100. I know it's a lot for a podcaster, but that's the trick. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number. Dr. Webb's coming up with a cool Web 2.0 site. According to Bloomberg, the business publisher news organization, they think, anyway, they estimate that 200,000 iPhones were sold the first day. Actually, they're quoting Global Equities Research. Still available at all 164 Apple stores on Saturday. AT&T says most of its 1,800 stores no longer had the phone in stock. Multiply 1,800 by 60, and you'll get how many phones AT&T sold. The, you know, kind of rule of thumb that people are quoting is that one-third to half of all the people who buy iPhones are switching from another carrier. What a dramatic, I mean, if they sell a million, which they probably will in the first month, I'm predicting they'll sell a million iPhones in the first month. That means 300,000 to 500,000 new customers for AT&T. And that many lost to the other carriers. Huge. I hope AT&T paid a lot of money for this lockdown. Because this is the thing I hate most about the iPhone. Well, one of the things is that it's AT&T only. Now, that's fine for me, but it just really limits others. There have been some activation issues, I have to say, and Bloomberg talks about this. In fact, they quote Steve Wozniak, the co-founder of Apple, who says, some of my friends are having activation difficulties. Mine too. Callie Lewis, because she was transferring a number, it took her, we talked to her a couple hours ago, it took her, I think, 2 days before the number was released. I think it was by T-Mobile. That's not really AT&T's issue or Apple's issue. That's the, when you do a number transfer, the release has to happen from the company you're leaving. And they have some legal limits on how long they can take on that. But I would imagine they'll take as long as they can get away with. That's where most of the activation issues seem to be. I tell you, I had no trouble activating it. I'm an existing AT&T customer. I took an existing AT&T phone and transferred this account over to the iPhone, and that happened in minutes, literally. It was very quick. You take it home, and you activate it with iTunes, by the way. You do it at home. So when you first plug in the phone to charge, and by the way, the phone is a brick until you do this. You can only make emergency calls. You can't listen to the iPod. You can't do anything else. So you dock it. You run the new iTunes 7.3. And you activate the phone from iTunes over the internet. And by the way, another thing to underscore, this is not a phone for somebody who doesn't have a computer. You really have to have a computer. You have to have a computer. It's not a phone for somebody who doesn't want to have iTunes in their system. You have to use iTunes. Not a phone for somebody who doesn't want AT&T. So you see, they've really limited the universe. Well, this phone probably could sell two or three times more units if it hadn't these restrictions. You know, the Razer, anybody can get a Razer on almost any carrier. You don't need to have a computer. You don't have to use iTunes. It's going to always sell better than the iPhone, even if the prices were the same. Apple stores, they said, sold 128,000 phones, AT&T 72,000, according to Global Equities again. And there is a wait of 2 to 4 weeks if you order online from Apple. They really wanted to make sure they were available in the stores, I guess. Most people bought the 8-gigabyte model. In fact, the story is the ratio of 8 gigs to 1 gigs is 3 to 1. Only about 1 in 4 iPhones are the 4 gigs, I'm sorry. Apple says they're going to get 10 million phones sold in the first year. I think they may do that. That seems a little aggressive. I think they will sell a million before a month is out. It's just, it's amazing what they've done. It is an unqualified success. Is it a success from my point of view? Meh, yeah. If you don't have to have it, again, I'm going to say this. If you don't have to have it now, you'd be well off to wait for the second generation. I'm sure they'll fix issues. It's a great phone. It's a very impressive phone. It's not unflawed. It has its flaws. It has its frustrations. But it is a remarkable achievement, I think. Josh, San Jose, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Josh.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great.
I have a quick question for you. I am setting up, or actually I have set up a main computer running Windows that over time has basically, it's built up about 3 terabytes of memory.
Wow.
In hard drive.
Wow. I've never heard of a computer with that much hard drive. How many disks do you have on there?
There are 5.
What are you putting on there?
Okay, so basically
it ain't Word documents
in my house.
It's video,
it
right?
Serves photos,
yeah.
Audio,
yep.
DVD, movies.
Ah, there you go. Each of those
so
is a few gigs.
I've been zipping them and storing them on
yeah,
there over the
there you
time
go.
Period.
That's what you
and
know.
The problem is now I've reached a point of how am I going to back these things up because they haven't been backed up.
Well, I guess you could get a 5-disc, 3-terabyte array.
Yeah. And something preferably that could be expanded if need be in the future.
They're going to kill me for saying this, but we have a sponsor, Carbonite, that gives you unlimited backup for $50 a year. And it, you know, it's over the internet, so it might take you several months to back up that much, but they don't give you a limit. And they probably...
storage of video?
They'll store anything.
Really?
They'll probably kill me for this because I'm sure that their business model is based on most people having a gig or two. You've got 3,000 gigabytes, but they are very clear, and there are other companies that do this as well. Although I like Carbonite a lot because it does it automatically. What you do is you right click on the folders you want to back up, and you just say back these up, and it will slowly over time. It doesn't take that long back up everything. I've got quite a few gigabytes on there, unlimited.
Carbonite, automatic, secure computer backup over the internet. Try it free at carbonite.com.
From the Tech Guy Labs in Northern California, every week at this time, we like to stop and smell the Web 2.0. Smells like fresh coffee and newly minted money. Dr. Webb is the cook who brings us this broth of interesting new websites every week. Hello, Dr. Webb.
Oh, great to be with you, Leo. I'm glad you like the aroma emanating from my kitchen here.
I could have said it smells like failure, too, because really we don't know who's going to make it and who's not in the Web 2.0.
It's been a long time since it smelled like Web Van here, and it doesn't.
Boy, it's hard to get that smell out, though, I tell you. That pets.com stink just lasted for years. No, I think I have to say, I think I'm like some people, not a lot of people, but some people who just devour this stuff like candy. And I'm signing up probably for half a dozen new websites every week. And I have to figure that eventually it's going to slow down here.
They'll be coming after you.
It's pretty cool, though. I mean, there is so much neat stuff out there.
Oh, it's great. You know, the Web 1.0 was the best magazine ever written, and it was written just for you. And Web 2.0 is like the best service company, and they've set up shop right next to your computer, and you can just keep ringing their doorbell and see what's available today.
That's a great way to describe it. It really is interactive. It's social. It's about applications, not brochures.
Yeah.
So tell us what you've got this week.
Well, this week I'd love to tell people about a really tremendous online application suite or suite of web-based business-type applications. And it's a suite that goes under the name of Zoho. And Zoho is actually kind of a subsidiary of another company that's been around a while called, what are they called? AdvertNet. And they're like 11 years old. They ship like 70 different products, and Zoho has, in the last couple of years, I guess, really become their flagship product. And it's well known, and it's very well respected amongst people looking for alternatives to the Microsoft Office application suite and other online suites of applications like ThinkFree and some others.
So this is basically a Microsoft Office, but on the web.
Yes, exactly. There's no, right now, or not yet, is there a desktop client that would allow you to run, to easily run these applications when you're not connected. You really have to be connected for now, but I'm pretty sure that's going to change.
Yeah, Google Gears might change that. That's one thing ThinkFree Office solved, because they were written in Java. They were able to create a standalone download.
Yeah. And with these new tools like Adobe's Apollo, now rechristened Air, and the Microsoft, what's that called, Light?
Silverlight, yeah.
Silverlight. Those are going to, you know, enable people to pretty easily write applications that are a combination of, you know, web applications plus desktop applications. I'm sure that Zoho is going to figure out a way to, you know, really erase that line between online and offline. But for now, their products really work best online. And what's remarkable about the Zoho application suite is the breadth of applications that are available to you. Almost everything they offer is absolutely, as they say, 100% free, with really two exceptions. And what they offer is a very good, very highly rated online word processing document called Zoho Writer, a spreadsheet called Zoho Sheet, a presentation package that is great, I think, called Zoho Show, that is far, you know, better for many applications than using Microsoft Project. Microsoft PowerPoint.
Right.
They have a very full featured CRM product called Zoho CRM that I've been using for about 3 or 4 months now. That does cost money if you have more than 3 users, but it's very reasonable.
That's customer relationship management. It's keeping track of your customers, your clients.
That's right.
Yeah.
Included is Zoho Wiki. There's a Zoho Planner. There's a Zoho Chat.
Wow.
There's Zoho Mail.
Now, this is going right up against, besides Microsoft Office, Google has some kind of a similar portfolio, although not as complete, it looks like.
I think this is a great enhancement on Google's suite.
Interesting.
It's really amazing. There's a Zoho Creator, which is like an online version of Microsoft Access. If you need to do database work where you want to, you know, store information and also develop database applications, it's got a complete complete scripting language called Deluge that allows you to kind of easily create speaking as a database guy, I'd say these are fairly sophisticated applications that you can create without a lot of knowledge.
Pretty impressive that they're giving this stuff away.
Yeah, it's very impressive.
You've used this for 9 months now.
Well, not quite nine, probably about 4 or 5 months.
Oh, okay.
For the CRM product, and I played around with it going back a year.
But you're using it as a real, like a real tool. It's not just playing with it. This is you're doing work with this.
Right. I work with some other guys on a growing business, and we adopted Zoho CRM early on because Dr. Webb used to use a very sophisticated online CRM package offered by NetSuite, which is a Oracle-based program. And I just know kind of the, you know, details of a fairly high-end CRM package. When I discovered Zoho CRM and found that it was free for 3 people to use and only about $10 a month for more people to use, I was shocked. You know, it's 2 orders of magnitude cheaper than NetSuite.
Do they put ads on the page? I mean, how are they making money when they give away a word processor like this?
I don't understand it, to tell you the truth, because there are no ads, and it's just remarkable. And in the last 3 or 4 months, they've released 4 new, you know, pieces of this growing application suite. It has universal login, so, you know, you log into, you give one account name and password, and then it shows you, you know, all these different things. You want to do a wiki, you pop over to that. You want to look at your project, you bring up your project dashboard. You want to do a presentation, you hop into that, and it's very smooth in movement between them. There's not it's not highly integrated. You can move data in between the major pieces, but
how
it's
about
not,
collaboration? If I do a word processing document, can others collaborate with me? Or
right? Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that would be the advantage of the web, I guess.
As well as the centralized storage,
so right? No matter where
everybody
you are,
can access things from any place.
Right.
This new product that came out about a month ago called Zoho Notebook is really great. It's like that Microsoft, what is it, OneNote? I think they call
OneNote,
it.
Yeah.
And with Zoho Notebook, it's shared so that it's a screen that kind of is like, it works sort of like a blog or a wiki where people can simultaneously add text to this workspace, which is then retained and version controlled and has a historical, you know, pathway and so forth. But you can drop images, you can drop audio files, you can drop anything onto this page, and it all just magically works.
Does it feel pretty snappy? I mean, does it feel like you're using a local doc, you know, programmer? Or
good enough. I wouldn't say that it's like exactly like using a local application, but it's perfectly fine.
And
if
you've
got a decent broadband connection, it's fine.
Read and write Word and Office documents?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah,
so who needs Word anymore? Boy, if I were Microsoft, I'd be very nervous. You don't even really need an operating system. You just need something to run a browser, and you can do all this stuff.
I think that's why Microsoft's moving toward their live stuff, right? To counter some of these increasingly impressive applications that are available over the net. It's the magic of kind of everybody having access, like we talked about at the top of the show. You know, it's like this store full of new services is moved right into your office, and you just get to use it when you want. When you've got that sort of ability to distribute this kind of service or rich set of features, I think it inspires programmers, you know, unlike ever before, and it's hard to keep up if you've got a team of even 1,000 programmers, you know, and they're all working on a campus someplace, yet they know they've got a, you know, the old-fashioned kind of distribution model that, you know, the older companies face. It's I don't know if I'm making much sense in trying to make this point, but it's just a wonderful feature of how we all share applications in the new web world.
Right, right. Zoho.com, word processor, spreadsheet, presentation manager. It's all free. It's all free. I don't know how they do it.
You name it, it's in there. Plus, there's an API if you want to do your own applications that share data with it, and that just goes on and on.
It's the future, and it's here today. Dr. Webb, thank you so much. I have to go sign up for Zoho now, so we'll let you go. Dr. Webb joins us every week to show us one more thing you can sign up for free. Thank you, Dr. Webb.
Thank you, Leo.
Just one more thing I got to sign up for. I think I should count sometime how many Web 2.0 sites I sign up for every week. It's probably half a dozen. But, you know, it's my job. You know, most of them, maybe only one or two a month do I stick with. Most of them I try, and then I say goodbye. But Zoho's, I have to say, I was kind of blown away with Zoho. I did sign up for it, and it's pretty capable. But that's the future, isn't it? Now, my real question is how long these companies are going to survive without some business model. The thing that's different around Web 1.0 from the original boom was there aren't all these, you notice there aren't all these initial public offerings. There are none. None of these companies are going to the stock market and borrowing money. And what that does is it means there's not as much pressure to be profitable, to turn it. They have private investors who are, for the most part, more patient. They don't have the kind of public scrutiny that an IPO gives you, but that means they can also kind of continue to work their magic in private. I think it just takes the pressure off. I think that's the big difference between the first web boom and this one. No public offerings. Hallelujah. And I do hope places, companies like Soho continue, or Zoho, I should say, continue, because I think that what a great service. I wonder, you know, I guess eventually advertising, or they do have some paid services, they'll turn it around. Anyway, we'll get back to your calls in just a bit. Lots more to come. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Give me a ring. 8888. Ask Leo. 8888. Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number. Just a few minutes to go, but I'll be back next week and every week on this fine radio station to talk about high tech with you. My final review of the iPhone. I don't know if I'll ever have a final review, but in a couple of weeks, I'll have a much more complete sense of it. What I've done is, I use a Nokia N95, which I like a lot. But I'm having all my calls forwarded to the iPhone. That's going to be my sole phone for the next 2 weeks. 1 week in Canada, 1 week here in the Tech Guy Labs. And after 2 weeks, I'll have to make that momentous decision. iPhone or Nokia? And I'll let you know. iPhone's leading. There's some stuff that's going to break my heart to give up on the Nokia. But the iPhone's leading. Gene is on the line from Orange, California. Hi, Gene. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hello, Leo. I need some help.
All right.
That's why I'm calling.
That's why I'm here.
First of all, let me explain that I am a computer illiterate.
Okay.
I do need to buy an external hard drive. I went and looked at them and ended up not having a clue what to do. There's all sorts of brands, Lossy, IO Magic, SimpleTech, MyBook. I don't know. I know that I don't need, 2,000 gigabytes. But,
right. You also don't need, and don't get suckered in by the one-button backup solutions and things like that.
Oh, whatever that is, okay.
Yeah, well, a couple of them have this where you press a button on the drive and it backs up your data. But really all it's doing is running a program on your system and it'll do the backup. You could do that yourself. It's certainly not worth paying more for. The truth about external drives is they're all about the same. They're all using roughly the same hard drives. There are only a few different hard drive manufacturers still. And they put it in their own box. Your only choice is USB versus FireWire. If you have FireWire, I'd get FireWire, but you probably don't. Most machines don't. Just USB.
No, I think I have USB.
Yeah, USB 2. USB 1 will be pretty slow. If you have USB 2.
I don't know what I have.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. The drive will work with both, but it will be fairly slow on USB 1.1 because it's just a slower interface. But as far as, brand. I think they're all fine. I wouldn't even an off-brand, a store brand, would be fine because it's basically it's a $40 enclosure with a $90 drive in it. You could even do it yourself, frankly.
I could.
Oh well, yeah, but let's not.
I'm not sure about that.
Let's walk before we run. So, Gene, basically, I'd say any of those are fine. You pretty much can shop by price.
Okay. Well, I noticed. It seemed as though a lot of play was getting to my book, which is Western Digital.
Yeah, it's a very, and that's
maybe
very good.
That means that's the best one. I don't know.
No, it doesn't mean it's the best. It means that they have the best marketing budget. And guess who pays that marketing budget? You do.
Oh, I know who pays.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't think going with the big brand name is necessarily the right way to go. You're really spending money on advertising to you.
And you think in terms of gigabytes,
Here's what I would do. I would double your existing hard drive capacity, at least. And here's why. Let's say you have a 160 gigabyte hard drive on your computer. Well, you want to be able to back up that whole hard drive, and not just once. You'd like to make two copies of it.
Oh, okay.
That way, you're really not going to be making two copies. What you'll do is you make one copy, but you'll want to continue to back up stuff after you make a copy.
And right.
And you'd probably like to have a couple or three versions of every document. So double your existing hard drive size, and that's kind of where you would start. And if you can afford more, if you double 160 is 320, and you can afford another $30 for 500, get 500.
Yeah, well, whatever seems like the right thing to do is what I will do. So now the other thing, I was noticing an ad in a paper that I got says external hard drive bundle with Panda Internet Security.
No.
2007.
Stop. Don't.
Forget it. Okay.
I'm not a big fan of the big security bundles. Panda's a fine antivirus, but when you get these bundles, you get a lot of extra stuff that you don't want, you don't need, and it slows your computer down.
Oh, well, okay. We don't want that, then.
No. Okay, I would say, how big is your hard drive right now?
I have to go figure it out because I don't know
the
answer.
If it's an older computer, it'll be 20 or
it's
40.
It's about 2 years old.
It's probably 40 gigs. Maybe it's 80. So a 250 gig hard drive would be plenty for backup. You want to make sure you could back up everything, of course, and not run out of room. And I think that's plenty. Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you so very
much. I'm so glad you called.
I want to thank you for. I listen to you very, very frequently and very much enjoy it. I don't understand a lot of it, but At least I know some words.
Gene, I'm going to make you a promise. You keep listening like this, you're going to be a geek.
Okay.
It sinks in.
I would like, one thing I would like to say, it's something that people, I'm not a very young person, and one, of course, we never had any training along the lines of computers. And I have looked and looked for some sort of a class that will just kind of, not just tell me how to use, you know, Word or some of those of the programs. I can usually do that okay. But something that tells me what some of the stuff means, because I'll get something and it'll say, well, this is wrong or that's wrong, and I have no idea what it means. Just a basic knowledge type.
Most community colleges are now doing classes like that. Because,
what do they call them?
You know, computers for novices or beginning computers or look for those instead of the ones that are Word or, you know, specific to a program. Most community colleges are now doing that. But I'll tell you what, you're listening to the show. I know at first when you listen for a while, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But over time, it'll start making more and more sense.
Right.
And in a way, you're getting a little training here. But the best way to learn is just to do it. You can't do anything wrong.
Yeah, well, my problem is I don't understand the words, you know.
Yeah, I understand. It's a language. Yeah, of course.
And, yeah, it's a language that I don't know.
I apologize. I will endeavor to be clearer and certainly define it when I use jargon. I try to remember, but sometimes, you know, I've been doing so long, sometimes I forget that's jargon.
Well, actually, I think you do a very good job on that line.
Thank you.
I really, and I do very much appreciate it.
Well, I'm so glad you listen.
And I have to, and I prefer to listen to you than the other guy, just so you know.
Good. I don't know who the other guy is, but I don't want you to listen to him anymore.
Well, you don't want me to say his name anyway.
So. Well, we're on in a lot of markets. There are a lot of other guys.
He's on KNX in Los
Angeles. Oh, I know who you're talking about. Actually, he was my predecessor at KFI. And he's an old friend.
I used to listen to him on there, and he was good, but then they kind of put him on a short chain on the other channel or the other station.
No, so. I like Jeff a lot. He's an old friend. I've been on his show many times. He's a great guy.
Yeah, no, I have nothing against him. It's just I have against the way they program the station.
I know what you mean. It's
so
really,
you're good, honey.
Thank you, and I really appreciate your calling.
And thank you for
your
help.
Take care, Gene. Yeah, I've been doing this longer than anybody, even an old guy like Jeff. I've been doing it since 1990, and I love doing it, and I'm still learning. But the best part about doing a show like this is you, and I learn from you. I learn when I talk to somebody like Gene who says, I don't understand the words. That reminds me, I've got to make sure I define terms. We're always trying to get better. If you like this, you want to hear more, I'll be back next week. And you can also hear my podcasts all week long at twit.tv. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week.
You're out.
Thank you very much. Go get your flight. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear the Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.